Aaron Kaluska and I are here with Mr. Samu Asada, the creator of 1001 Spikes, and also the producer Tyrone Rodriguez from Nicholas, and translator
Mike
McNamara. Sorry.
No worries.
So, Mr. Asada, I was wondering if you could begin by telling us the overall concept of 1001 Spikes.
My name is Samu Asada, and I am a designer by day. So I design flyers and all kinds of little things. And by night, I make games in my free time. So I had a few games on Xbox Indie and on the PC as well. And then finally, I had made 1000 Spikes, at which point Tyrone took notice, and then he pulled me in and said, hey, you know, you want to take this and go multi-platform and go bigger with it. And I was like, that sounds like a great idea. So that's kind of the origination of 1001 Spikes.
And the game has a very retro style to it, and I was wondering if there were specific classic games that inspired you to create this and to use the style that you have in this game.
So, first of all, it began, I'm a big fan of Famicom games, and that was where it all began. I grew up with them, and what I wanted to do with 1001 Spikes and 1000 Spikes, I guess, is to recreate that kind of feeling of a very retro style, very old style game on current gen or next gen consoles. And, you know, and I also feel that through recreating something, reproducing something in a current gen environment, we can really kind of learn from our predecessors and all of our ancestors in the video game world and see what they had done, how to improve it, and how we can really expand on this and improve it for current generation kids to play.
So when you're creating a game that is inspired by older games, how do you choose which elements from the old days to keep and which ones to change and make more modern?
So I think one of the most important things is to keep it very simple. And that means simple rules, simple gameplay, and very simple controls. And all the simplicity is what really made old games truly, truly great. And it's confusing to the player if the enemy does super complicated AI movements. So in a game like this, we really focus on enemies will be very predictable. They'll walk towards you, or if they'll pop up, they'll pop down. So that's really the basis for what I wanted to recreate. In older games, when you see traps on the screen, they would usually be lined up or combined in a certain way, and you can see them before you get there. And it's predictable. So if you have to jump across three ravines, you'll jump over the trap, you'll jump over an enemy, and you'll land. Phew, I'm safe. But what I felt really didn't exist back then is a completely hidden trap, so you're safe, and then you telegraph it to them, oh my god, there's going to be spikes here in 1 second, I got to move. So that extra added element of kind of tension and intensity to keep players on the edge of their seat and on their toes is something that really wasn't in older games. So that's something I'm trying to kind of reinvigorate and inject into 1001 Spikes.
As a designer of a purposefully difficult game, how do you find the right balance between difficulty and not making it just cheap?
So let me just begin by saying I love difficult games, but I'm not necessarily that good at them, or I don't consider myself an expert gamer by any means of the word. So what my kind of rule of thumb, my measurement of difficulty is when I feel like, oh my god, this is about the cusp of where I can't go any further, that's about when I feel the game is balanced correctly. And I know, especially in the 1000 Spikes, I designed that entirely on my own. So it probably wasn't the best measure or best average of, I never had anyone test play, I never had any focus groups. So it might not have been the best measure or best way to design a level, but I feel like that's probably a comfortable level for, you know, the kind of target audience I'm going for. I think a lot of mainstream titles, all the AAA titles, they have focus groups, they have testers, they have all these opinions thrown into a bin, and what you're left with at the end of the day is kind of the common denominator, the big average among everyone's kind of opinions, which is good if you're trying to sell millions of copies, but if you're trying to pursue that really kind of special, unique, just, you know, offshoot directional kind of fun, I think it just will never work. And that's why I really took advantage of the fact that this game was indie. And sure, some people might take this game and say, oh my god, it's impossible, and throw it down. But there might be that other person around there who has the same kind of sense and is looking for the exact same thing I am in a game. And when that person plays this game, I'm sure it'll just connect with them. And that's what I was going for.
Great. So, I think my last question is for Tyrone. What was the thing about this game that made you think that you wanted to help bring it to more people? And could you also give us some of the release details?
Sure. As you know, I work with a lot of developers through Nicholas, and as a team collectively, we really like to play games. And it was at the time when we were working on Cave Story 3D. I don't remember where I found the link, but I heard of Temper of the Dead, which is another one of Samusan's games. And through Temper of the Dead, I started playing that and really liked it, but I was curious what this designer, what else he had done. And that's when I stumbled upon what now became 1001 Spikes. And what I really liked about it is basically summed up by Samusan. It feels like a very authentic NES Famicom era game, down to the color palette, down to how difficult it is. The only difference I noticed is that instead of starting with 3 lives, you started off with 1,000, and now you start off with 1,001. And so I saw a lot of potential with this game where there's probably not enough people playing it, and it reminded me a lot of the first time I played Cave Story, where it was this game that I instantly was gravitated to. I wanted to continue to play. I wanted to know more about it, and I eventually beat the game, and it's not very easy to beat. So I really enjoyed how he balanced the game, and now we've done some more tuning on 1001 Spikes. We've added new modes, we've added multiplayer, we've added secret characters. The original teaser trailer from last year had a certain character that's in the BitTrip series, which doesn't take much figuring out to know who it is. And we're going to include a number of characters that you'll be able to unlock. You'll be able to go back through the game and play the levels and continue to unlock what you didn't before. There is a sort of alternate harder world, if you can imagine it harder, kind of like the upside-down castle in Castlevania. And it's just going to be, I think, for people like us, it's going to be a lot of fun, especially once you get a platformer and it has simultaneous multiplayer, not back and forth. It's basically, you can go 1 to 4 people on these various levels and hopefully help each other out. But, you know, it always degenerates to killing each other. As far as release, we always stick to the when we finish it, but we're aiming to get it out by the end of this year on multiple platforms, which will include PS Vita, PS4, Wii U, 3DS, so all the major consoles. If Steam wants it, we'll put it on there. If Steam doesn't want the game, it will not probably get a PC release because the number of sales will not be sufficient to tolerate the amount of piracy the game will get, to be honest.
Understood. Okay, thank you all very much. Looking forward to the game.
Hey, I'm on the show floor of E3 with Jared Rosenberg. Jared's leaving a little early today on the last day of E3, so I wanted to ask him what he thought about Nintendo's overall lineup this year. Jared, how happy are you with the games that we've seen?
You know, from everything I've seen, I would say I'm somewhat happy. I'm really excited about Super Mario 3D Land. I love Super Mario. I keep calling Mario 3D World 3D Land. You know, that mistake's because I love 3D Land. Mario 3D World is a lot like 3D Land, but obviously there's some improvements. That's probably the game I'm most excited about. Strangely, so I was just playing some 3D Lands like 10 minutes ago, and I noticed that I was sort of missing one feature that was in 3D Land, which was the 3D, and noticing I was having trouble timing some of my jumps because I was used to the 3D helping me. And, it was sort of annoying. Even they have those, you'll remember in 3D Land, they would always have, like, the bonus levels where it would be, like, a sideways camera, and, like, they would purposely even want you to have the 3D on there.
Right, like, they would hide things behind other things because of the perspective, and it would kind of layer objects that look similar, and you had to kind of rely on the 3D effect to distinguish which ones were in the foreground and which ones were in the background so you could navigate your way to the top of a stack of blocks, for instance.
So there was a room like that where they weren't hiding anything, but there was a star floating in the air that I had to jump and get, and I missed it twice. And I was like, I wish there was 3D. Yeah, I'm excited about that. You know, Donkey Kong looks cool, but I'm not super excited about it. Wind Waker, I honestly, you know, I probably will buy it at some point, but I don't know if I'm going to get it this holiday. So overall, you know, excited, but a little disappointed.
Now, obviously, you're already a Wii U owner, but we are the few and the proud, the Marines. Do you feel like the the lineup that Nintendo brought today, combined with the somewhat limited selection of third-party stuff that we know is out there for Wii U over the next year or so, do you feel like this is what they needed to bring to E3 to kind of help the system grow and prosper far beyond what it has so far?
I think 3D Land will help get a few people to come. You know, Mario Kart 8 that's not coming out this year will get people to come. But overall, I think it's not exactly the lineup that's going to make someone who so far wasn't paying attention go out and buy it.
Okay, thanks, Jared. Have a good trip home.
Thanks, Ronnie.
Okay, we are over here by the Divekick booth in Sony's area facing Nintendo. Neil and Justin are about to play Divekick against each other, and they may be doing so during this segment. So I'm going to distract the hell out of them while they play this super simple fighting game. Now, this being the final day of E3, Neil, I know you're going to get plenty of chances to talk about all the Nintendo stuff you played on Connectivity next week. So I'd like to hear about some of your favorite experiences on other systems from this E3.
Well, I actually just came back from playing Knack, and then I played Contrast on PS4 a little bit before then. And Knack was fun. There just wasn't really that much to it other than, like, you had a standard attack, you would collect items to make your golem bigger, and then you'd have a special move that you could build up that didn't really seem to do all that much. It was a pretty basic demo, and I'm not really that excited for the game. I was telling TYP about it, about how it's the kind of game that I would think about getting it if I already had the system, and it wouldn't be the kind of game that I would buy the system for that game. So that basically means I'm not getting a PS4 anytime soon. Contrast, I don't really know anything about that game. It was just an open PS4 game demo, so I tried it.
It looks like that Shadow game that came out, Lost in Shadow, that came out on Wii a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it looks a lot like Lost in Shadow. Basically, you can turn into a shadow where there's a spot that's lit up, and you can walk through there, and there's puzzles that you solve that way. And that was probably the coolest thing I saw on next-gen systems. And then I also played Loco Cycle on Xbox One, which you're on a motorcycle, there's a dude hanging off the back. It was nonsense, but that seems to be some Twisted Pixels games just in general. And then I also saw a presentation for Fantasia Music Evolved, which when I first heard announced seemed like complete bullshit. But after we didn't play it, we could have played it, but I didn't want to wait. But after seeing the presentation, it actually looks really neat. And Andrew made the comment about how, man, if only Harmonix would make an Awenden game. Because that's what, a lot of the interactions that you're doing, albeit with Kinect, are similar to what you would do on the touchscreen in Awenden, or in Elite Beat Agents. And that was really neat.
Well, Harmonix is an independent developer. Maybe Nintendo will approach them at some point and ask them to make a new Elite Beat Agents for Wii U or something like that. That's kind of a dream of mine. But now, Andrew, you came from the farthest away for this year's E3 out of all of our crew, all the way from Australia. You're getting ready to head back now. Well, no, you're going to be in the States for a couple of weeks, right, to tour around. But obviously E3 wasn't the only reason that you came to America this year, but having been before once or twice, how many times have you been to E3 now?
This is my second time.
Second time. How do you feel like it compares to last year, and do you feel like, what you've seen here and what Nintendo brought to the show, did they make it worth your time and money to come so far?
I think what Nintendo had on display was a lot more promising than anything that was shown last year. I mean, Nintendo Land was fun and all, but really, where was the big Mario title? Where was the big first party? Where was Smash Brothers? Everyone was waiting for that. It was something that everyone wanted to see come the Wii U launch. And that's all they really had. Nintendo Land, a bit of a Pikmin demo. Seeing what's developed since then and what's come out since then. I'm super stoked for Mario 3D World. I'm super stoked for Smash Brothers, of course. I mean, who isn't? All the 3DS games that I played, the Link Between Worlds, probably the least impressive is the Yoshi's New Island. But compared to last year, it's been a huge improvement. It may not be the expo that saves the Wii U as a console, but it certainly has made some significant steps towards bringing the fans back in and proving that they can do things to the standard that we have come to expect from Nintendo.
Now, knowing that 3DS is becoming very dominant in the handheld space and it's becoming a really big hit around the world now in its third year, do you feel like, are you surprised to see so few 3DS games at E3? I mean, they're even in Nintendo's booth, they only are showing three or four demos, and they're rather hard to find and rather hard to get to in most cases. And very few third parties are showing 3DS games. How do you feel about that?
I'm not particularly worried for the 3DS. I mean, the first few months of this year and leading up to E3, there has been a killer lineup of first-party titles and really strong third-party titles. As to what was shown this year, I really care about the Phoenix Wright series. The new game looks spectacular. As far as what was shown, there's a few things that'll tide us over for the end of the year, but it seems like, in terms of Nintendo's overall perspective, E3 is becoming far less important to them. It's sort of come to a realization that Nintendo Direct itself is more like a miniature E3 in and of itself. And if anything that's really, really first-party killer applications coming out for the 3DS, I have the feeling that they're more likely to release that information through a future Nintendo Direct rather than saving it until E3 all the way next year.
Fair point. All right, thanks, Andrew. I'm going to move on to Justin now, who is currently playing Dive Kick. So, Justin Berube, you're playing Dive Kick right now, but I'm going to ask you to talk about something completely different while you do this.
Okay.
So, how do you feel about Nintendo's overall lineup? Do you think Nintendo did what they needed to this year at E3?
Not exactly. They have a good lineup to bring them back on track to have pretty much a new game release every month. However...
You just won, by the way.
Yeah, I didn't even realize. But, yeah. But the games I want most of them, especially Smash Brothers, aren't coming out this year. So I'm a little disappointed in that.
And what else, other than Smash Brothers, is not coming out this year that you want so much?
I want to really hear more about X. I guess it's like a sequel to Xenoblade or whatever. I just really want to see that. A lot of the software is sequels this year, and I'd like to see some more new stuff from Nintendo. So,
do you feel like X would be given more credit as an original title, even though it does appear to be a sequel or at least a spiritual successor to Xenoblade?
I believe so, just because it looks like it's hinting at some online play, so that could change the game drastically. Other than that, I mean, you could look at it as a Xenoblade sequel, but there's a lot of new stuff in it as well. It probably doesn't even have the same storyline either. I really don't think it's connected. I think it's a completely new game. It's similar to Xenoblade, but not exactly Xenoblade.
Yeah, we really don't know yet. They showed a trailer during the Nintendo Direct, and we've seen nothing else about it. I guess, going back to the 3DS question, I talked to Andrew about it. I know you're a big 3DS fan. I feel like the two biggest 3DS releases around the world this year are going to be Monster Hunter 4 and Pokemon XY. Neither one is here at E3. Pokemon was embedded in a special event, but it's not actually playable. It's not on the floor. They're not even really showing anything about it out here at E3 proper. Monster Hunter 4, a Capcom game, nowhere to be seen in their booth. The only 3DS game they're showing at all is Phoenix Wright, which is only going to be available as a download. Are you surprised by that? Do you think 3DS is just sort of, as a platform, is sort of immune to E3?
I wish it wasn't. It shouldn't be, but Nintendo's been treating it that way for the last 2 years now. I want to see more games for the 3DS in Nintendo's booth at E3 and not have a ridiculous way to play them like they have this year, where you pretty much have to wait on like a two-hour line to get to play them for one game for 10 minutes or hunt down a booth babe, which is just a pain. It makes it really difficult to try the new games, but Nintendo could have put a lot more out here for E3 on 3DS, like Mario Golf, which I guess just got delayed. Pokemon should have been here. I really didn't think it was going to be, just because I know Nintendo, but there's no excuse not to have a short playable demo showing off some of the new Pokemon, at least. So that was rather disappointing to me.
I think it's shocking when you look around, you see 3DSs everywhere. Everyone's carrying one. People are checking Street Pass on it all over the place. It's very weird to me if they clearly don't want to spend a whole lot of space on showing 3DS games, but they could just have a station that would broadcast out demos, which they did 1 year for DS demos, I think. But if they did that, they would be held in temporary memory. It's not something you could keep on your system forever, but it would be something that you could play that day or maybe even for a few days after E3, and you wouldn't have to wait in line to do it. I'm really surprised they don't use that as kind of a demo distribution method locally here. And I wonder if they'll change their tune next year, because I have a feeling that once PS4 is really fully matured, Sony's going to set up kind of a bank of PS4s for remote playing their PS4 games on Vita, and they're going to encourage people to bring their Vitas to E3 to play the demos as they walk around the show floor. It's going to be really interesting to see if they're able to pull that off, and I think Nintendo could do something very similar, but unfortunately, this year, 3DS games are few and far between around E3. It's been the case, actually, pretty commonly over the past few years.
Yeah, as with your demo idea, there were some problems that year, if you remember, too. Like, everybody was trying to access those demo stations, and it made it almost impossible to download the games for quite some time. But it is a good idea, and I'm sure they could work out the kinks. Nintendo should really do that. It makes a lot of sense. As long as it's a smaller download, people shouldn't have to be waiting here for half an hour and try and get it. But it is a good idea.
Yeah. Thanks. All right, thanks, Justin. So we're going to wrap up this segment. Talk to you later.
Okay, well, E3 just ended. We're hanging out in the media center, and I'm here with Guillaume. So Guy has been busy doing RFN stuff this week along with the home team. James and John have been very busy as well, but we've mostly been here to play games. And Guillaume, I was wondering if you could talk about what was your favorite game? What game from E3, especially Nintendo, do you feel like you will be thinking about for the rest of the summer, maybe through the rest of the year? What game will you be kind of fantasizing about playing the demo over and over in your head, and you'll be so excited for when it comes out?
Oh boy, it's really hard to answer that question, because I think I started crying when I started playing Yoshi's New Island. It's a game that I wanted really, really very much to love, and it turned out to be as disappointing as some of the people who played it before me said. It's just too damn slow, and Yoshi just doesn't keep... Yeah, he just takes too much time to get started, and the egg-throwing mechanic, it just doesn't seem to work the way it should, and I guess these are problems that they can fix, and I hope that they take the time to fix them, because I don't really want to play the game that I played in the past 3 days.
But the best game. The best.
Okay. Game. Oh, sorry. It's hard to answer. I think that the most visually striking and the one that was easier to get into was actually Bayonetta 2. And I would not have expected that, but it's just so flashy, and it seemed to be easy to string combos. I mean, I was playing on the easy difficulty, but it's just so much craziness in that game. You're fighting with your hair, and you're summoning demon dogs from hell to chew up some gigantic beast. I'm not sure I understood fully what I was looking at, but it looked pretty sweet.
That game, I found out today, I guess it's been known the whole show, but I didn't realize until today when I was over there watching it, that you can play that entire game on the gamepad with touch controls. Did you get to try that out? Is that something that you think you would want to use in a game like this?
Yeah, I saw the option at the beginning, but I did not pick it. I think for this kind of game, I would prefer buttons. I mean, Ninja... What was it? Ninja Gaiden, Twin Dragons, or whatever it's called. No, the one with touchscreen. On the DS. That was fun, but I don't think I would want to play Bayonetta that way.
Yeah. So, what did you feel about Nintendo's? I shouldn't ask you this, because we'll be talking about this on RFN for weeks to come, probably, about what all of this means together. So let me ask you,
What did you play outside of Nintendo's booth that really impressed you? Was there a third-party game that you tried out on one of your appointments? Was it something you tried on PS4 or Xbox One? What really made a very strong impression on you when people come up and ask you, well, you know, what was the cool thing that you saw there outside of Nintendo? What would be the first thing that comes to mind?
I didn't get to play very much. Like, I played maybe one PS4 game, Knack, and it seemed to be pretty standard, so I don't think, like, it's not going to stay with me. And I played one PS Vita game, the Ys game, which is very, very, very similar to 7. So, you know, that looks cool, but I feel like I've played it before. No, I think Shin Megami Tensei 4 is what I'm looking forward to the most at the moment. It's just, it seems to be a very good RPG. It does seem to do a lot of things right. You see the enemies on the screen, on the map, before they attack you. You can preemptively, you know, take a swipe at them to hurt them before the combat even starts. Shin Megami Tensei has always had very snappy combat where you just string together, you know, like you just hit the enemy's weak points, you know, time after time, and that way you keep the initiative in combat and it's over very quickly while still being fun and strategic. And the story seemed to be pretty, you know, pretty goofy, pretty, well, actually, I don't know about the story, but the dialogue, like, I mean, you get to talk to the demons that you're fighting, you can recruit them in your team, and so you can talk to one, and they'll ask you what you think about bugs, and you can have the choice of saying, well, I like them, I hate them, or I used to be one. So, of course, I had to pick that choice, and the demon was just so impressed that I shed my carapace, you know, bug carapace, to become a squishy human. He thought it was very cool, so he joined my team. So yeah, like it seems like a fun RPG. It seems very, I don't know, like I it seems like a new experience too. I mean, there's not that many games where you play in Tokyo in an RPG. So interesting setting, interesting story, and I'm looking forward to it.
Cool. Thanks, man. We'll be back with more thoughts from the NWR crew here on the last day of E3. All right, so we are here out in the hallway after E3 is closed, and I'm standing next to Alex Kalafi, who just finished his first E3. And Alex, I know it's very fresh on your mind. I'm very curious to hear, what was E3 like for you? Did it meet your expectations? Was it totally different than what you kind of had envisioned in your mind? And are you satisfied? Did you get what you wanted out of being here this week?
Okay, so it was a very fun first 2 days. Like, it didn't even feel like work to me. I did one or two impressions each day. I played 10 to 15 new, maybe great games. And I just had a great time. Thursday was when it got really interesting, when all the walking I did on the first 2 days started to catch up to me. So, ultimately, I was having fun, but the last 3 hours were basically me, you know, sort of trying to summon the courage to have a good end of E3 by playing all the games I could. But it wasn't just the games. I mean, it was great hanging out with everyone, but I also got to meet a few people that I would have never met otherwise. I got to meet Wombat from the CAGcast. I got to meet Junichi Masuda, the Pokemon director and music guy of the original games. I ended the day by taking a photo next to Charles Martinet, and I thought it was cool that, yes, this wasn't the E3 when Wii U was revealed, but it was the E3 when Wii U became a real system, and when PS4 and Xbox One were both playable for the first time, and I had a lot of fun with both systems, and I had a great time overall.
Now, did you ever, I've gotten over this over the years, because I've been to so many of these, and I kind of, I see bad habits in myself, and I try to squash them out. But in the early few years that I came, I would often find myself like between appointments or something like that. Like, it's E3 is easy when you have an objective, when you know where you're going, you want to go play a certain game, or you have to go and meet someone at a certain place at a certain time. You just figure out how to go there, you go there, and then you do it. And then they turn you loose, or the appointment ends, and now you're just kind of afloat in the middle of E3, you know, in the sea of people and noises and games. And I find, I used to find myself kind of wandering, and I would just kind of start walking around looking at things. I wasn't really sure what I should do next. I felt kind of aimless, and I would sort of almost become stressed out and have this kind of hectic feeling of not really knowing what I should do next, because you're literally surrounded in every direction by new games that aren't even out yet that you could be playing. Did you ever feel this? And if so, how did you kind of handle it?
Well, I didn't feel it at first. When I really felt it was on Wednesday and Thursday, when, I don't know, there were a couple things that upset me for whatever reason. I was stressed out because of all the games I was playing and I had to write. And the two things that really kept me going, the first one is going to sound a little silly, but Animal Crossing. Animal Crossing was a fantastic game to, you know, go to the hospitality or even the regular media room, sit down for 20 minutes, and just have a good time in my town. It wasn't wasting any time working. It probably even made me a better writer that I could relax for a little bit. And it just made me think, okay, there's a happy place, even though it seems really stressful right now. The other thing, which allowed me to have some focus, is that in the back of my head, I sort of knew where everything was, and there were some anchors where, like, if I don't know what I need to play and I really want to play something, I can always go to the Sony booth, which was fantastic because they had plenty of indie games and plenty of stuff to play. And I could always go back to the Nintendo booth if I really had nothing to do, because I had no problem with playing Mario 3D World another time while I tried to figure out the next thing I had to play. And while some of the appointments got hard, and while it was a little awkward for me to be turned loose and just have to find my way to get coverage, I knew where I was, I knew it was E3, and I sort of carried this mantra of, if it's a little shitty now, it's going to get better.
All right, yeah, this is a stressful place, we work really hard when we're here, it takes a physical toll on you that, you know, few other experiences I've had can match, but I feel like even in the lowest points, you have to remember that you're in a special place, you're in a coveted spot. And there are many, many people at home who wish they could be there right then. And so I've always found that to be a useful motivation to keep going, to go beyond the point where I feel like my feet can't handle any more impacts and my back can't handle carrying this bag anymore, because there are so many people. I mean, I'm really lucky. We're really lucky to be here, right?
Well, and the other thing is, I know this is going to sound a tiny bit sappy, but one of the great things about being at E3 with NWR is that there are 5 to 6 at least other people in the whole convention who know who you are, who are willing to be there for you if you need anything, and will be there for you if you need anything, and people were. And it's pretty nice.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm glad you had a good time here at your first ever E3. Hope you'll be able to come back next time or sometime in the future. And good job this week on the site.
Thanks, Johnny. Bye, everyone.
Okay, so I'm here with Kimberly Keller. Now, Kim, this was your second E3, right?
Yep.
And your first with NWR, and I just spoke with Alex about his first ever E3. I'm really curious to hear from you what the differences were between last time and this time, being with an organized staff and having assignments and having appointments and really working at E3 versus just kind of being turned loose and doing whatever you want the whole time.
I felt like there was more pressure, that's for sure. I was definitely running around a lot. It was exhausting. I think when I first went, it felt really long. I was wandering around doing things at my own pace. But here I was really noticing more and staying up later. Getting up was a pain. But I kind of feel like it was more rewarding, actually.
Yeah, I can understand that. Now, I kind of asked this of Guillaume earlier. When you go home, let's try to project yourself in a month or 3 months from now, and you're thinking back to E3, what are the games, just maybe one or two, that you will wish you could go back and play that demo all over again? What are the games that made the strongest impression on you that just made you want more of that so strongly?
Good question. I think Batman, Blackgate, I really wish I could have seen more of the city. I just had a lot of fun with Rayman Legends. That just really stuck out of my mind. I just want to keep playing it. There's just so many games.
Were they showing parts of Rayman that are not in the demos that are currently on Wii U from the eShop?
I'm actually not sure. I don't have a Wii U at home, so that's why for me it was really like the first time I got to experience it. And I mean, you just do so much where you're interacting with the touchpad and moving it around and going back and forth between the TV and the video. I just love the variety.
Yeah, that was one of the favorite demos from our group last year at E3 also. Unfortunately, that game is pretty much finished on Wii U, and so it's no surprise that they're bringing a really polished demo back to E3 this year, but we still have to wait a little bit longer. And Kim, was there anything outside of Nintendo's booth that you got to play that you just really enjoyed and that gave kind of helped give you a more well-rounded E3 experience than if you had just stayed in Nintendo's booth the whole time?
Do you mean on something that's on another console or just in general non-Nintendo? Like,
could be anything.
I really loved Watch Dogs, the presentation they gave me. I had no idea it was that intensive of a game and how you can go into other people's, like hack into other people's games and stuff. That was really amazed me. And playing the new Splinter Cell, I was really bad at it, but it was really fun. And I actually wish I could have done that a little bit more too.
Did you play the co-op in Splinter Cell Blacklist?
Yeah, I played co-op with TYP, and we were both amazingly bad.
All right, thanks, Kim. Glad to have you on staff this year, and I hope you had a good E3.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm back here for one last dispatch from E3 2013. We're walking out of the convention center down Figueroa Street in downtown Los Angeles. I'm here with Michael TYP Cole. Mike, first, my big question for you is, you being the video game music expert on our website, along with Aaron Kaluska, I guess, who already left, what games this E3 impressed you musically the most?
Oh, man, that's hard, because at E3, it's so hard to hear the music. It's either like overpowered by the sound in the background, or they give you headphones that are too loud to overcompensate for that, and then you still can't hear.
But I know that you put way more effort into actually hearing the music than most people do. So I'm sure you heard something that made an impression on you.
Sure. The Zelda 3DS soundtrack sounds pretty good. It's kind of remixed versions of the, you know, themes from Link to the Past. And there's kind of like a Spanish, like, you know, trumpet or something going on there. That's pretty cool. And let's see, another
closer.
Closer,
yes.
Like this close. Okay.
Yeah.
Another one, I actually like the Sonic music a lot. Even on the 3DS, it had good music. It's kind of catchy. I mean, Sonic games usually have pretty catchy songs, at least in the beginning, so it didn't really surprise me. I liked the Donkey Kong Country, Tropical Freeze. I have to think about that title. Tropical Freeze, the soundtrack. Again, it's hard to hear everything, but what stood out was that the bonus stage was a different song, and it was very jazzy, almost like kind of lounge music or something, and it was pretty cool.
All right, so now for the hard question. This was kind of seen as a pivotal E3 for Nintendo. Their console's not doing all that great right now. They really need to show up with something very compelling that would convince a lot of people to buy the system. Obviously, there wasn't a whole lot of third-party support this year, and that's going to have to come from Nintendo selling more consoles before the third parties really invest in it and bring their games to it. So what I want to know from you is, do you think Nintendo delivered on their mission here? Do you think the games they showed and the announcements about the hardware in general are enough to sort of turn the tide for Wii U and help it become a success in the long run?
I really don't think so. There were good games. There were fun games on display. You know, Mario 3D Super Mario 3D World is, you know, a lot of fun. I think a lot of people will like it, but there's already a Mario platformer for four players. So I don't know if there's really, I feel like what they showed isn't going to target a different audience from the people who haven't already bought a Wii U. And so I think they missed the mark. I mean, there was fun stuff. There was nothing that really made me say, wow. Really popped out. I mean, Bayonetta seemed like their token Reach title in terms of a game you wouldn't expect, Nintendo to be publishing. But again, that's kind of a niche audience. I don't think that's gonna, there's nothing there that really was grab people to say, oh wow, that's the new Halo, or wow, that's whatever, the new Metroid. Or, I mean, Metroid's pretty niche too. But there wasn't a game that really I think is gonna market to the masses.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget that the first Bayonetta, although it's kind of a cult favorite game, it sold so poorly that Sega decided not to publish the sequel, and Nintendo had to sort of save it from the garbage dump. And I agree that it's an impressive title, but it's hard to imagine that game has a ton of sales potential, you know, given what's happened before and given that Nintendo historically has not had a whole lot of success in selling that kind of game to their base.
Yeah, they need a good marketing campaign, and I don't think they've had a good marketing campaign for any of their Wii U's so far. I mean, before E3, I had a friend from work who I was talking with, you know, and he was asking, oh, what's, you know, going to be the big thing at E3? And I said, well, PS4 is coming out, Xbox One's coming out. Those are going to be the big things. He's like, yeah, but I'm waiting for the new Nintendo console to come out. And I had some news for him. So, you know, that's what they're dealing with. That's what Nintendo's up against. They don't even, people that are interested in Wii and have fond memories of Wii don't even know Wii U's out. They either they hear it and they think it's some attachment for Wii, or they just didn't even know it existed. And I don't think the things they've showed at E3 are things that are going to get a lot of mainstream press coverage and say, oh, wow, there's a new Nintendo console out here, and look, it's really cool and powerful, and you know, Assassin's Creed's coming out on that, I can go get it on that. I just don't see it happening.
Do you think anything shown this year at E3, either by Nintendo or anyone else, sort of helps cement the justification for the gamepad? Do you feel like that direction for the console, that the focus on that accessory, that controller, do you think that we now have more proof that it was a good idea or more proof that it was a bad idea?
I'm having trouble thinking of any demo on the show floor that really made intricate use of the gamepad other than, I guess, Wii Party. I mean, that one was pretty interesting, and I think there's potential there, but I think the answer is no. I think the gamepad's cool, it's off-plays cool, but it's not, I don't know if it justifies whatever R&D resources went into that versus, say, a more powerful system, because there aren't a lot of games supporting it. Even games that you would expect, like Mario Kart and on Pikmin, where you have like split-screen multiplayer, they didn't showcase that on the show floor. Which really surprised me, because that's a cool feature. I mean, Sonic Transformed really makes great use of it, and I'd be shocked if some of the other games they showed don't make use of that. But they're not pitching it. They're not selling that hard on the showroom floor. And I don't know if it's because they want people to see video on the screen or whether they just don't care anymore. To me, it's off TP play, and that's it.
All right, one last question. Since this is the year of Luigi, and since you're Luigi, you are the younger plumber. One game that we haven't really talked about very much this week, but it was playable on the floor, is New Super Luigi U, the DLC pack for New Super Mario Bros. U. And we did get to play some of it. I think I actually got to play it with you. I'm curious how you feel about how it demoed, and what are your feelings now that the game is just one or two weeks from coming out? Are you pretty excited about it? Do you think it's finally time for Luigi to have his own 2D platformer that he's the star?
Well, yeah, but I don't know if this is really the best showcase for a 2D Luigi platformer. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it looks like a meaty DLC pack, but it really is DLC, and it feels like more New Super Mario Bros. U. And, you know, it was fun. It's hard to judge when you're playing with people that, you know, are running into you and stuff. You know, I had very much a single player experience for the original release. So I think it's fun. It's kind of neat. The level designs clearly are such that, you know, they don't give you much time to think about, like, the star coins. So you're going to have to go back and replay it a couple of times to figure it out, because you're on a tight time limit. But, you know, the levels seem like they're shorter than the main game. It reminded me more of some of the Time Attack levels and some of the later challenges in the retail release. So, I mean, it's not a full new Mario game, but I mean, for $20, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Well, the Nabbit part, I couldn't care less about.
It's not going to affect you, though, if you're primarily going to play at one or two players, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was never really a fan of four-player New Super Mario Bros. Anyways. It's too chaotic. It's counterproductive to actually progressing through the game.
Right. All right, man. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon on Radio Trivia, right?
Oh, yeah.